Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 261 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Since you have Jason Rugard, he's got a rundown for us.
On today's episode, we do the Box Office Ace Prediction Game, our thoughts on The Wedding Ringer, Black Hat, Paddington, and American Sniper going wide. News, Adventures in Babysitting is getting a remake coming to the Disney Channel. Golden Globes, where tonight we'll be talking about that, as well as Batman vs. Superman being cut into two parts, with part one being released sometime in the coming year. Also, reviews for The Gambler, Exodus, The Purge 2, Maleficent, and Jodorowsky's Dune. Trailers, we'll be talking about Ant-Man, Peanuts, Good Kill, Anarchy, The Lazarus Effect, Big Game, and Chappie. That's the international trailer for Chappie. And let's get into this game at the top of the hour.
It's not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
Okay.
Ready. Who knew Liam Neeson was still kicking ass, huh? I mean, I knew he was figuratively kicking ass, but I mean, literally kicking ass.
You didn't know he was actually doing it?
I didn't know he was actually kicking ass. I mean, other than Maggie Grace's boyfriends. But this is unbelievable. A $40 million opening for the third part in what I thought was going to be the last kind of gasp of the franchise.
It's still an estimate. It can go to 39.
It could also go to 42 at this point. I mean, this thing is... I'm this strong for a third in the series. Why would they quit now? You know, why would they back off now? I don't understand. Run out of ideas? No. Doesn't it seem like Luc Besson and Robert Mark Kamen can come up with ideas at the drop of a hat for these things? They're so prolific.
Well, you don't even need an idea, right? It's just, you just say Taken, and then it's just Liam Neeson doing some action stuff.
I like it. So does America.
That's it.
$40 million worth of tickets sold this weekend. I said 37.5 for my estimate. What was your estimate again? 33, 34, somewhere in that range? You went Die Hard 4. Remember that?
Yeah, I think it was 33.
Yeah. Which would have been high. And so I won the weekend for the game because I just lucked out and guessed higher than everybody else. But if you haven't done so, get over there and get into the box office Ace Prediction Game. The year is young, and we do have four films coming out this weekend, so... The gap widens. That's what she said. Mm-hmm. Okay, The Wedding Ringer. Kevin Hart. Do we like him still? Is he still viable? I mean, too much too soon? Too little too soon? Get it? Little. He's like 5'2". But I like little Kevin Hart. I had a shitload of sugar before we got on the air tonight. Okay. Can you tell?
You like little Kevin Hart.
Little Kevy Hart. I do like little Kevin Hart.
You don't like
Hart,
him when he gets big.
This movie,
I got it.
No. It turned into Martin Lawrence. But this movie looked like it was going to be a good movie back, a couple, or at least a funny trailer a couple months ago. And you weren't too keen on the trailer, although the subsequent trailer you thought was funnier. This has crept up on me. I didn't know this was being released this weekend. Surprise release.
That's weekend. Because it's not. Yeah. It is what it is.
Well, and I'm saying I think it is a moneymaker for Screen Gems, which has done these very well. So I'm going to put my guess at $28
million. Well, okay. Well, I'm not changing mine. Mine's $28
million. Oh, well, look at that.
And I'm not changing it. There's three other movies, so we're good.
We're good. I'm not changing. No one's changing. Shit.
So we're in complete agreements on The Wedding Ringer then. Yeah, it's not huge for... For anything like this, would it be, you know, in the 30 millions, right? 28's big, definitely. But I just don't see, it's just not, it doesn't have the pizzazz that a lot of the other comedies have had.
There's a little something taken off of it because it's been out in so many movies in the last year. And but also, wedding movies do really well. They tend to do well. But moving on, let's talk about Black Hat, Michael Mann's thriller starring Chris Hemsworth. Seems to possibly have gotten lost in the mix this coming week. I don't know how well it's going to do. It has been kind of mismarketed in a lot of ways. It's a confused campaign. Is he a hacker? Is he an action hero? Is he both? The early reviews have been very strong, but yeah, even so, I think this is not going to catch on, especially with American Sniper playing much to the same audience. I'm going to put this one at 9 million, and it barely gets to 9 in my estimate.
All right. I'm going to put it at 12.
Okay. Yeah, I see both those, but I don't think this goes higher than 14. I think this goes in
I'd be surprised if it did.
Just for the fact that American Sniper, like I said, plays to that same audience.
Well, it looks silly, and it looks like a lesser action movie, really, to be honest with you. And it's probably directed very well. I like Michael Mann a lot, but it just looks a bit silly.
But
well directed, well shot, probably well acted. I don't know, the script's probably decent, but it just looks silly. But you know, those Mission Impossible movies look very similar, but they're not. They're at least they, you know, it's a Tom Cruise movie. It's you know what you're gonna get in a sense out of those. Whereas this, it seems, I don't know what I'm gonna get out of. Is it gonna be? It seems like it's maybe a little too serious, but then it's completely ridiculous. So,
which is what the problem was with Miami Vice for a lot of people, was that it was a ridiculous premise that he took to the extreme of seriousness and all the fun out of it, drained all the color out of a lot of it. So this looks like it could suffer from the same problem. I mean, if you went for more of a straight adventure, it'd probably be a bigger commercial hit. But there's a reason they're releasing this in January and not in December for the critical acclaim, or in the summer for the commercial acclaim. All right, moving on to Paddington. This is the talking bear movie from across seas
that we are
getting. Yeah, I mean, children's book, right? This is a children's...
Yeah.
Long-time children's book, yeah. Paddington the Bear. All right.
Very well.
What's your estimate on Paddington the Bear?
Paddington the Bear. I don't know. I'll say 26 million.
Well, I'm not moving. I'm saying 25 million. So we're a little closer.
Close on that one too.
Strange bedfellow this week.
Yeah, I mean, we're practically touching tips.
I thought that was your toe.
Don't cross the streams. Don't cross the streams.
Fucking bellows, man.
We're definitely... This is turning into a regular sword fight at the urinal here.
Man, how about those bears? Okay, so... Big dog.
American Sniper. That's, this is definitely...
And I'm not calling you that. I'm calling American Sniper the big dog, okay?
No, I'm not to be confused with little Kevin Hart.
Exactly. Little KH. The American Sniper, I think, is going to be the number one movie in the country this coming week. The question is, how big is it going to be? Is this a blockbuster opening? Is this just going to be a strong, solid opening?
I think so. It's got IMAX now.
Which is unbelievable to give this an IMAX release.
I know.
This is, you know, like, where does this scream IMAX? I mean, that's just the lack of product on IMAX in January. But this is getting an IMAX release, so that'll bump up ticket sales as well with the large format pricing. Where do you stand on this one? Where do you jump into?
I'm going to say 36 million.
So you're going a hair under what Lone Survivor did last year.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going
to
go
to tell you.
Higher.
You can go higher than that. Because
I do. I think this is going to go. I'm going to go 42. I think this just breaks out this weekend.
Yeah,
it's a big hit.
Yeah.
I really do, because I don't know anyone that doesn't want to see this, or says they want to see it at least. So if not this first weekend, I think this will have long legs at the box office. All right. That wraps up this weekend. If you haven't done so, go to Box Office Ace. And speaking of American Sniper and being shut out of all sorts of Golden Globe nominations, so hopefully it can get some Oscar nominations and ride that good wave into March, but it did not have any Golden Globe nominations under its belt. Did you watch the Globes tonight?
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Overall? I mean, were you surprised at all that the Golden or the Grand Budapest Hotel won over some of the other kind of bigger films, Birdman?
No. Birdman's a bigger film?
In the sense that it had a lot more critical buzz riding with it.
I don't know that it did. You know, it depends on who you listen to. When it comes to this kind of stuff, I read an article recently where someone was saying, you know, the most celebrated movie of last year was Boyhood. And you think, well, that's an interesting term, the most celebrated. I mean, no one saw that movie as compared to what? It certainly is not the most celebrated movie of last year. I would find that very hard to believe, perhaps among critics. But
I'm celebrating it right now.
What do you do? I think it's silly to say
I'm not telling
any
you how,
of these movies are any bigger than the other ones. So I don't know. I wouldn't call nothing an upset that happened to the Golden Globes this year, really.
I would say it's an upset for the fact that everyone deserved earlier in the year. Budapest was released at least in March and not in that corridor that is usually reserved for that. And Wes Anderson is I don't know. I guess he's kind of Golden Globe esque. You know, I don't think he's kind of a lightweight Spike Jonze to me in a lot of ways. You know, I don't think he's ever made a movie as powerful as Her. I felt, which was Spike Jonze kind of big one last year. But I don't know. I was really surprised when the Grand Budapest won tonight. I thought it was the biggest upset of the night. The other stuff, not so much. I thought Keaton's speech was great speech, especially after last year's McConaughey going through his, you know, I'm my own idol.
I'm a little done with the speeches at this point. None of the speeches were really worth anything, including George Clooney's. It was just classic standard stuff that you would hear anyone say, and I don't know. Was there anything great? I'm not going to remember these speeches. Yeah, everyone was fine. They did a good job, you know. I mean, I'm certainly not going to knock their speeches. They went up there and you know, gave thanks for the award, but I mean, were you really that moved by it?
I was moved. I moved all around when I was watching it.
You were moved?
Keaton. I was moved by Keaton. No, I thought it was nice when Keaton talked about his son being his best friend and whatnot. It was a good moment for Keaton. And
it's nice, but everyone could say that, right? I don't.
Yeah, but to see this guy who I guess was known as a comedic actor, and it's fucked up that he won in the comedic category. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't even in the drama category, but as the Golden Globes are for, I guess, to have 10 nominees as opposed to 5. Going, though, into this, I thought that The Theory of Everything was going to pick up most of the awards tonight because it had such a strong, when it won the best score, I thought, well, here we go. This is going to start. But then Patricia Arquette won and a couple of surprises amongst that. And then, I don't know, I thought when Linklater won the directing award, he's got to think now that there might really just give him the Oscar for the fact that it's a cumulative sometimes, you know. It's kind of a looking back at an artist's whole repertoire. So I think that they might just nominate him.
And that movie is
so many good movies.
It's a bit different than normally what we've seen.
Well, you said celebrated movie. In a sense, it's celebrated because it's a small movie that was a risk to finance that ended up being something that turned out to be not only watchable but is being, you know, acclaimed. So I think that they're awarding it in a sense because they want that kind of film to be made. Even Clooney said tonight, let's not forget about the small films and things like that. So it looks good when they give the small film the big award sometimes. You look at The Hurt Locker over Avatar and things like that.
It looks good.
I'm serious, you know. I think it
I don't
does.
Know who it looks like, good oh, on, but okay.
I think it looks great on her. Miss Golden Globe.
It looks good on her.
Frasier's daughter.
Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I love that. She looks like Kelsey Grammer, too. I was like, oh, I see the jaw, the resemblance in the jaw. I was like,
Is that Beast? Where are you? Get over here. All right. Well, that's the Golden Globes for you. And now we'll have the Oscar Oscar nominees. Well, I mean, really, we'll have the Oscars here in less than, like, a month? I mean, this is all just rolls here real quick.
It's going to be a lackluster Oscars as well, really.
Yeah. And
I'm sorry. If the upset is that Grand Budapest Hotel wins over Birdman, then I don't.
Well, American Sniper arguably could have been in there from a lot of his perspective.
It got cut, shot out. Yeah, I was a little. I find that interesting. I don't know, but I guess it was just too late, right?
Or the Foreign Press Association, people that make up the Foreign Press, which is God knows who, it just didn't like it. So, which happened with The Gambler, which we'll talk about later on in the show. All right, Adventures in Babysitting is a cult classic from 1987 starring Elizabeth Shue. And if you didn't know that, you probably shouldn't be listening to our show because we are Shue fans over here. You know, like the bronies, Little Pony guys? We're Shusters.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
Let's not talk about it again. We'd like to refer to her as Jennifer from Back in the Future too. Okay? You look quite over Amy Schuster.
I just watched this movie recently.
That proves my point.
See, I mean, I rewatched it. It's streaming on Netflix, so I did just rewatch this recently.
Is this written by Chris Columbus, or is this written by John Hughes and directed by Chris Columbus?
I think it's written and directed by Chris Columbus.
Okay. This was a great movie when I was a kid, and really introduced me to Thor, oddly enough, because the little girl's fascination with it when I was a kid. I mean, that's just my intro to Thor and the Marvel Universe. Babysitting. Thank you. Thank you for that. However, Disney Channel is going to do a direct-to-TV remake of this movie, and Simkiners.
Yeah, really.
I mean, that's a massive fail on that one.
How are you going to finish the show?
I know, right? Okay, show's done. That's fuck it. Booth's over. I'm leaving the booth.
Oh, God. Anyhow, so this is going to be a TV show now?
No, it's going to be a TV movie. TV show?
A TV movie?
That's what I heard.
Coming to Disney Channel? It's going to be a movie?
I thought it was.
They must have a lot of faith in the material.
Obviously, that's why it's premiering on the fucking Disney Channel, right?
I bet it's going to be I don't know. It sounds more like this will be prime for a TV show.
How far down does your script have to be to hit the Disney Channel? Is that above or below the Lifetime, Hallmark, Inspirational Channel? Where on the fruit tree does this fall? Because the Further Adventures in Babysitting, I mean,
it's fallen and it's now rotting.
It can't get up, that's for sure. But this will be seen briefly, and I'm sure only by a fleeting few, because the people in our generation that remember this, you can't really, there's no need for a remake, retelling, or any. This kind of is a time capsule movie in the same sense that Planes, Trains is, and a lot of those huge.
It still works.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because still, kids could still watch this. I think it still works.
Yeah, I'm glad. So this holds up. Shot. Do you recall a film called a film? Calling this movie a film is giving way too much credit. A movie called Big Shots with two kids in it. It was a white kid and a black kid, and they stole a car that had a body in it, and they were being chased all across the country. I want to say it was written by Joe Esterhoff's, and God, it was from the mid-80s. You ever call this movie?
I don't.
Yeah.
Nobody has any idea what you're talking about.
Nah, it's just bad parenting. They took me to see everything. It was cheaper than the babysitter. I don't know.
They took you to see Big Shots?
Right. I only wanted to see it. I thought it was probably some Van Damme flick and trying to be two kids. All right, let's move on. Batman versus Superman is probably, arguably, who am I arguing with? Myself. Better than wrestling with myself, but arguably,
okay,
the most anticipated movie of 2016. And yet, they're talking about cutting it into two and releasing it, part one, this year in the already crowded 2015. Now, let's review this. Reason one, this is a bad idea. The fucking script wasn't written as two movies. So how are you going to make this two movies outside of blowing this and just bloating it up with battle scenes and Peter Jacksoning it?
Well, I've seen the other Superman movie they did, and I'd see no problem splitting that into two movies easily. Just pick a place and cut.
Fine. Pick a place and cut and then add 30 minutes more fighting and CGI and all that shit. I'm good.
That's what they do. That's what they're gonna do all the time. I don't. You like the Hobbit movies, so you'll probably enjoy this. They'll make a trilogy for you.
I liked the Hobbit movie, the last one out of the last five. You like more of them than I do. I liked the last.
There's only three Hobbit movies.
There's technically six, and I've liked one.
No, so technically no.
Okay, there's been a shitload of these Peter Jackson movies. I've liked one. But I do like King Kong, so it is what it is. But this does not sound like a good idea in the least, because of the fact that it's just not. It's 2015 is already a crowded year for this, and it's like Warner Brothers wants to stick their nose in. Why throw this out?
Releasing this movie why make this movie at all?
For a standalone sequel, I understand why they made it. To make it now two movies. is not, this is not.
The idea is always to make a million and a half movies. Yes, it was. There's no reason. I mean, we're looking at this as a jumping off point for a million other DC comic movies, right? So the idea was always to just rape DC, right? Just like Disney did. Well, Marvel really did it to itself. But that's the idea, right? Make as many of these as you possibly can.
Well, I refer back to point one, that there's not enough script for two movies in this one that they filmed.
So. It doesn't matter. People will watch it and they'll think, and we'll complain about it and say it's fucking stupid. And everyone will be like, eh, but you know, you watched it.
I think they're going to do, though, is they think they're going to create a bigger market for the second.
You're not going to win.
But they're not.
There's three Hobbit. Yeah, they made three Hobbit movies. They split the last Twilight movie, right? They split the last fucking Hunger Games movie, right? This is what they're doing now. Just you gotta.
They're splitting the last Divergent movie.
I'd love to complain about this, but this is just fucking how it is now because people will buy tickets to go see this stuff. So it doesn't. I don't even know what can you do. I don't. The movie wasn't necessary to begin with. I think it's growing into something that could be interesting, just for the fact of the Ben Affleck casting. But aside from that, Batman versus Superman really has no point in existing.
Wow. I think Zack Snyder is very upset you said that. I'm gonna let him know you said that. And who's the? I think Henry Cavill. I think,
do you think they were like, oh,
right now,
I have a great script for Batman versus Superman. Do you think that's how this movie came to be?
Tell
this
story.
Hell no.
Tell this story. I'm just not looking forward then to part one of a movie that has virtually no story because it'll be all spectacle. So at least give me a story.
That's what they do.
Well, I'm curious to see how they're going to work out the conflict.
You can't have one. Guys, so. They're gonna fight. Superman's going to punch him once and he should be dead, but that won't happen, so who knows.
Well, yeah, it used to be like trilogies, but now it's a trilogy with a two-part third part. It makes no sense.
There's no trilogy anymore. It's just open-ended, especially with the comic book stuff. It's just open-ended, right? We'll just stop it whenever we feel like rebooting it, then we'll just reboot it. That's how they
and
treat
in some cases,
the, this stuff
the
so
soft
it's
reboot,
like
which is who, like Transformers the hell knows for a very kind of a light touch reboot. Mm-hmm.
Sure, but it's open-ended. Like, it doesn't have a point to any of it, beginning to end of any of the fucking movies. Doesn't matter.
All right, well, now we got you all fired up. Let's go over to these reviews, because you are in a good mood. Let's get over there.
Boo.
Let's take a break. Let's take a break, catch our breath, and collect ourselves, and clean up this mess, and then we'll come back.
Why don't you eat some more sugar?
Yes, please.
Proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Look what everybody is saying about the lair of the unwanted.
I know. Jess and Rachel at Real Insights said, the lair is our number one favorite podcast.
Yeah. And Nick Job of Demented Podcast said, I look forward to every episode of the lair.
You know, Dylan Fields of the Lambcast says, I'm planning to get a Layer of the Unwanted tattoo across my face. I love it so much.
Yeah, and Mad Hatter of Matinee Cast said, I fucking love this podcast. I would die for it.
Yeah, Scott and Whitney at Frankly My Dear said, we got married thanks to Layer of the Unwanted.
Kai of the MILFcast said, dude, I'm speechless. Check out the almost Lammy-nominated podcast about the best of the worst movies that's out there. Come see what the fuss is all about. Check out The Lair of the Unwanted on iTunes.
Yay.
All right. We got that bit of accounting taken away. Let's now talk about some of these movies. We saw 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 movies.
Some of them. You talk about these movies.
You talk about these fucking movies. You expect me to talk about movies on a movie podcast? This is insane.
What kind of bullshit is this?
All right. Okay, let's talk about Jodorowsky's Dune just briefly because I know you spoke about this beforehand and I got a chance to watch it and I believe you said you liked this documentary, that you were
that's really
into
good.
It. It is a good documentary. I think that it's a great it's probably the best behind-the-scenes documentary I've ever seen on a movie about how things come together and luck and chance and meeting. It reminded me of the Terry Gilliam one that they did on the Don Quixote movie he tried to do, but this one was even more engrossing. But I do think after watching this that that movie that he's describing would have been a fucking disaster. I mean, I don't think he'd have been able to...
I really would like to have seen it, yeah.
...wrangle all the elements together that he says, especially with Dolly wanting $100,000 an hour and Mick Jagger and the things and the elements. And also, I do... I was... You know, I'm listening to his kind of pitch for it initially, and I'm thinking, this guy is... There's no way. And then they're showing kind of clips of his other movies, not El Topo, which, you know, we know about, but the Haunted... the Holy Mountain or whatnot, which I had never heard of before. And I'm looking at some of the visuals thinking... That's very clever how they did that. Like, that could have been done this, and, you know, like, so I started kind of buying into his vision as it went along in a lot of ways. And I'm thinking, this guy's either a good salesman or, you know, I'm into it, you know. But you really, I just, like I said, I think all the elements would have not have come together like he dreams they would have in this fever dream that he talks about having all the time. But a great documentary on a missed opportunity of a movie. You think he could have pulled this off?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I do. I don't see a reason why he couldn't have. He obviously has the talent to do it. I mean, what you're putting on him is basically that the universe didn't want him to make this movie, which is fine. Maybe shit wouldn't have come together in that sense that he was, you know, he was kind of stacking the deck against himself. But I think that it would have at least been interesting to have seen this, far more interesting than what they turned out.
Right, even though what they turned out is a fun, to me, cult classic. It's a fun, guilty pleasure.
Sure, but wouldn't you rather have seen... I mean, just looking at the depths this guy went with the universe he was creating and everything, and knowing that he would have had to have done these through practical effects, and that it would have been trippy, and it was kind of a story that deserves to be a little trippy, doesn't it?
It reminded me, when he's talking about it, like the Flash Gordon, and then they show clips of Flash Gordon at the end. Yeah. I didn't realize a lot of people went and worked on that, which makes sense, because it sounded like the visual landscape he was trying to set up, especially with some of the costumes that he was showing of the Paul Atreus and character. But the thing, too, is that he was so pig-headed and stubborn, you know, I'll make this movie 15 hours and whatnot. It's like, you're so far gone at that point. There's no, because the documentary positions itself in a lot of ways with these people giving it context that it could have been the next Star Wars, or it could have been the Star Wars, and it could have beat it. But Star Wars was totally commercial. This sounded like he was trying to do everything he could to make it unpleasant and not commercial. And even though it was visually going to be stunning and whatnot, he didn't sound like he was going for that Star Wars.
It sounded pretty commercial to me. It didn't sound uncommercial. I don't know. I disagree with that. I think it sounded very commercial.
I don't know. The main character getting his arms cut off and thrown in a basket and whatnot. I'm just thinking, my God, and this thing played by a 12-year-old boy. And, I'm looking at some of these elements thinking, like, how would you get that passed? Then again, it was the 1970s, and a lot of weird shit was getting put out of the American studio system.
Yeah, well, this wasn't a big – it would have been through different channels, obviously.
Great documentary, though. I highly recommend this. I believe it's streaming. I did get the disc. The physical copy of a disc.
I don't think it's streaming, is it?
No? Well, if it's not, you should.
I had to get it on disc, too.
Try to find this, because it is worth watching, especially if you are a fan of Dune or Jodorowsky's, either of those.
Well, filmmaking. If you're a fan of filmmaking, it's cool. It's cool, guys.
Especially just the coincidence and serendipity he had of meeting people and getting people casted and whatnot. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to talk about Maleficent, which you saw, and I have not just put myself down to see it. I started it, and I get as far as the DVD menu, and I just can't do it. What's going on with this one?
It is exactly what you think it's going to be. It delivers exactly what you think it's going to deliver, and that's pretty much it. I can see why people liked it, but it's really boring, I thought. Just because nothing, I don't know. You know the story, and it's just, that's it. I wish I could give more of a review to it, but you know, it's just, it reminds me a lot of the Universal Snow White movie, you know? There's a lot of like CGI worlds, and there's fairies, and it's pretty, and you're like, yeah, okay, so where are we going here?
It looked to me more like Oz, the Great and Powerful, or Alice in Wonderland, those kind of, as opposed to Snow White one.
It's more like the Snow White. It doesn't move like those other ones. It's slow.
Okay, so did you liked it less or more than the Oz one?
Oh, less.
And Alice? And
I found it to be kind of boring, and it was a little much. I mean, Angelina Jolie, it's actually cast really well. Like, she's really good, and, you know, the other people are
South
good.
South African cat. Yeah, I don't want to read that guy's name. Yeah, yeah. Not going to do it, Artie.
Yeah.
The guy from District 9.
No.
Yeah. He's good,
though. It just is what it is, you know. It's exactly what you expect, and it's not really my cup of tea. I wasn't like, oh my gosh, I'm really into this whole Disney princess thing. So, well, okay, I am, but it's not.
No. Just the animated variety, huh? You sick puppy.
Exactly. Ooh, I like them when they're 2D. I like them flat. No, that's not good.
Jesus Christ! I didn't even have to that one. You literally dumped me. It's like if I had the button to hit a commercial break, I just had to
Where's the cough button? Cough button coming? No, it's no. Well, I'll get back on track.
Here. Just, hang on.
It is what it is. So, if you like that kind of stuff, you'd probably enjoy it, and that'd be that. Though, you know, I couldn't just imagine. It's not. I don't know. It's not as powerful as a lot of Disney stuff. And it's very, having seen them do a lot of their TV stuff, it feels like these kinds of movies are just TV movies, but with a huge budget. If that makes sense.
Lightweight.
Well, that's very much
the
just
Cinderella's coming
this to
and
this.
All
and
that
the
now.
Cinderella thing looks the same. It looks kind of the same. Like, this is the story. We're not really doing too much, you know, different to it, even though this was supposed to be the story you didn't know about, but it was kind of like you could guess it. They just end it happily. Like, how is that?
Well, on the heels.
What the fuck?
Frozen and thing, Once Upon a Time and things like that. These have now taken off this Into the Woods, Oz, this whole kind of world is Cinderella upcoming is taking off. All right, so you get that a negative review. Let's talk briefly about The Purge 2, Anarchy. You got a chance to catch up with this one. I put this on my top 10 best of last year. I didn't like the first one. I loved this one. What did you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really liked this one as well. It was far more action-oriented than the first one. But, just having them run around the city and, you could call everything that was going to happen. But it was like when you called it, you hoped that it would happen, and then it did, and you're like, oh, hell yeah. And it just kept going like that for me. It felt very like much like a 90s action movie. You said like a John Carpenter flick, and that's a very good approximation to what this is, because it's almost more of an action movie, but it's just very gory.
And it has some nice ideas in there, some kind of overall themes the idea behind The Purge and what they're doing and the revolution. And I thought that by opening it up outside of the
that's
house
all in the
first
one
was a great idea, but by opening up the world, it actually gave it it made it a little more intimidating to me. I liked it was better.
What's funny that you can see, like, there's several things. This definitely made it feel like a John Carpenter like B movie from the 90s when they come across the second truck and you're like, oh, we're using sets, okay, here we go.
Yes.
Like, we've paid for this big truck with this big machine gun in the back. Let's use it more than once.
Right. Like, okay. Might as well take use of it. It
I'm
looks
here
so
with
awesome.
You. I'm with you. I got it.
But I thought great idea of a nightmare vision of the future and doing it effectively. And I really like Frank Grillo, who played kind of the main character, at least the anti-hero guy.
He has
a
very
warrior
90s action feel,
doesn't he? He feels like he escaped from like a B-movie heaven and somehow made it from direct to DVD onto the big screen,
he could,
and vice versa way.
You could, you know, he looks kind of like a Dudikoff ripoff or any of those guys.
Yeah, he's also starring on a television show called Kingdom right now on direct to DVD, but I haven't watched, but I know he's starring in that. So yeah, I'm glad you like this too. Like I said, I was pleasantly surprised enough to put this on my top 10 from last year because I was not expecting anything from this. I was kind of dreading it and came away from it really impressed from what I saw. And they're doing a third one now, which now that they've, I think that they've kind of position themselves to do as many as they want because they have so many avenues and so many different things they can play with.
Well, I think that he said, though, that he's got one more and then he can close it up. So, but I agree. I could watch more of these, especially if there's just a simple action movie where you're going to have people run around and do things. I'm actually okay with that. I think Dredd did a great job of that earlier on, and this reminds me a lot of that.
Yeah. I would say I put these two in the same universe in a lot of ways, you know. Comparing movies that are in the same universe, let's talk about The Gambler, which I just got a chance to see, and I would put this in the same, kind of exist in that same universe as The Counselor, and I know you didn't care for that, and it's not shot as crazily and put together as kind of obliquely, or it just opaque. It's weird. This motherfucking movie is, I can't put my finger on it. The Gambler to me is missing one thing, and I still haven't figured out what it is, but as it is, I still think it's one of the best movies I've seen from last year. I really like this movie. It starts off with a fantastic scene, and it just doesn't let up from there. The script is as tight as an air drum. There's really not a wasted scene in here. There's a great sequence where Mark Wahlberg's character basically tells his literature class that none of them have any talent because they're just not going to make it, and there's one person in there that can make it. And he points out that that student. It's great scenes. Scenes like that make up this whole script. And it feels very old-fashioned in a lot of ways. And we talked about on the last show with The Equalizer. It has a sense of professionalism behind that. This has that same thing where this feels like it's got a sure hand behind it, whether it be the acting, which is all the supporting characters are cast fantastic. And John Goodman especially is kind of channeling Marlon Brando in a lot of scenes, it seems like. Sitting around half nude, shaving his head, and shot in the darkness. But he's turned into a great character actor. I mean, John Goodman in the right role. And he's got a couple monologues in this that are just fucking outstanding. Well, if anything, Wahlberg kind of goes through the movie with a certain detachment. Kind of like he plays it more like a spoiled brat as opposed to a guy who's really on the edge. But then again, that's a minor quibble. And I don't know. I like this movie a whole lot. But it does kind of exist in that downtrodden world of really wealthy people doing things to harm themselves that they don't need to do, that the counselor existed in that same world. So I recommend it highly. I can't wait till you see this because I like this movie better than Rounders. I know Rounders is kind of considered a classic in a lot of people's minds, and I like it that movie as well, but I really like this one even more. This at least made sense to me when I'm watching somebody gamble fucking everything away, like the sickness behind it and the mentality behind it, that he was only happy when he had nothing and the whole idea. Mm-hmm. So check it out. Ooh, that was some good sugar.
Are there robots in it?
It's a blackjack and a transformer. That's my Oscar.
All right. Moving on to the other movie that you also love that I'm sure I'm not going to like.
Oh, Exodus, Gods and Kings. I forgot I even saw this movie. That's how great it was. No, actually, I like this movie a lot, too. 3.5 stars in this one for me. For the fact that Ridley Scott had... This was dedicated to to my brother Tony. He dedicated this as well as The Counselor. But this, you could see obviously why. Because this is about two brothers warring. I mean, this really... They take it a biblical story and made it... an action movie.
We know
why. Two brothers at war.
It's because this is the movie he's working on. This is the next movie.
Yeah. This was the next one.
I love those dedications. Dedicated to this person. It really has nothing to do with them. It's just they died right before this movie was made. It's like, okay.
I thought it was touching because of the fact that it's about brothers warring. But this movie, for what it is really an action spectacle. This is an action movie. This is the best movie of its ilk that has been made since Gladiator. I mean, this is as good as Troy was, better than Alexander and those kind of ones that were misfires.
Well, I
King
hope
Arthur.
So.
but yeah, really, I thought the Joel Edgerton, who let's bring up Warrior once again because people should see Warrior. I know you didn't like it as much as I did, but I always stumped for that flick. But Edgerton, who played the older brother in that, is Ramis in this. Bale is Moses, and he's cast out early. And then they get right into
and a bunch of other a bunch of other white guys play the rest of the cast.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. A bunch of other commercially viable actors, as Scott said. Mm-hmm. And really the whole idea behind this movie, or like the selling point behind this movie, is the CG plagues and the locusts and the crocodiles and the death of the firstborn sons. And
which they didn't really play up in the trailers very much.
It's really only the last hour of the movie, and I don't know. I mean, it's probably good they didn't play it up, because it does. If you're waiting for that, then the movie isn't going to be very good to you. But if you can take the movie scene by scene and story by story as how it's progressing and what they're doing with it, and not take it as scripture, even though it's based on scripture, it's at least entertaining for what it is, and that is a big kind of lush, historical, biblical epic that they used to do and that they started doing again in a lot of ways. I think this is better than Noah. For being a strong movie and an entertaining movie, and it's
but it's vastly different than Noah.
It is. I mean, there's no rock monkey, rock monsters, and things like that. But story, you know,
there's no inspiration from the Hobbit movies that you love so much.
No, I mean, if anything, people are pissed off because God is represented by a 12-year-old boy in this movie, but. In an artistic way, it makes sense for what it is and the innocence of the kid and all that. So I was pleasantly surprised by this one as well. I don't know why it's
well, I will see it.
It's better than Kings of Heaven.
Because these are, they're hard. Yeah, well, again, I hope so. They're hard to get through, especially after you just listed a bunch of ones that came before this. Now, after you've seen all those, do you really blame people to be like, I don't know. I mean, just the title alone, Exodus, you think, oh, boy. This is going to be a long one.
It is long, but it moves. Scott moves this movie along pretty well. And the battle scenes are done nicely. The score is done nicely. You're watching it and you go, okay, there's glimpses of the excitement that was rendered by Gladiator. I mean, it's nowhere near Gladiator. Let's get that off the bat here. But there are glimpses of that kind of excitement in gearing up for battle and the editing of battle and stuff like that. But, I mean, you watch this and you go, Scott can do this shit in his sleep after he did Gladiator, Robin Hood, Kingdom of Heaven, this. I mean, this guy just knows his shot selection. And it's an economy of shots in this movie. So things look good. There's a lot of wide shots and things like that. So I like it. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know.
All right, not sold yet. Okay, let's do the trailer attic.
Oh, shit.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for trailer addict.
I think my audio is lagging a little bit tonight, so I'm sorry to everyone if I'm talking over Jason more than usual, but it's the digital age that we live in.
We have Ant-Man, the story of Kevin Hart. No, just kidding.
Because he's tiny?
No, he's Hank Pym. Isn't the guy's name Hank Pym? Pym's cut, please. This trailer debuted this week and had 29 million downloads. Unbelievable.
People thought it was the movie.
Yeah, right. What do you think? Before this trailer, you sold?
I'm sold that it's going to be a Marvel movie, so it's going to be watchable. You know, I'm going to be able to ingest it and I won't have diarrhea right afterwards, but I don't know that it's necessarily, it looks like it's really stupid, right? I mean, can you imagine, the guy gets on, he's little. I really don't know. It's going to be a heist movie, I guess, because that's really the only, I don't even know how you'd use a tiny superpower. But he gets on a little winged ant thing. How long would it take this dude to get anywhere? Just buzzing around, taking forever.
True. I didn't think you liked that. I did like that, you know, Paul Rudd's character is going to be, look like self-deprecating, and he asks the obvious questions of is it too late to change the name and things like that. Michael Douglas.
But that's all standard Marvel stuff.
I agree. When you watch this, you realize that anybody feels like can make a Marvel movie now. I mean, they're Peyton Reed, Brad Pitt, the guy, whoever's making this, it's just,
yeah,
it's all good.
They had the format down. You have to admit, like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Just watching this trailer, you think, yeah, okay, like maybe this might be the worst of the Marvel movies, but as I say, you're not going to, I don't know. You're not going to walk out feeling like horrible. You're going to be like, I watched a decent movie. It entertained me at least.
Yeah. You're not going to sink the whole Enterprise here. You're not going to kill Marvel with a bad movie because everyone's waiting for that movie. And this doesn't look like it's going to be that one. I thought Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, silly me, was going to be the one that sank the ship. And it wasn't, obviously. So
But this could be, I mean, this is almost interchangeable with like an Iron Man type thing or any of that stuff, right? The guy
which is gets superpowers,
makes the jokes, and yeah, in a way, especially with the suit. I mean, the use of the suit and just definitely, I guess all superhero stories are the same, right? Yeah, you just shoot them all the same way. Good stuff. But what do you think about the story here? It's going to be a heist movie. This is just like the first trailer, so they don't really tell us how they're going to use things. But do you think they're going to be able to take the shrinking aspect of it and actually use that?
No, it's going to be foolish. Let's be honest here. Even if it's sort of government, you know, we got to break into the type of Mission Impossible type deal or something like that, I think it's going to be very, very foolish.
But he can shrink down and he can fly through the keyholes.
It's going to be humorous enough, though, to save it, I think. So, foolish. Very foolish. Then again, Guardians was fucking outlandish, so it's all outlandish.
But it took place in space.
Yeah, you're right. So
people weren't shrinking down. Like, the superpower wasn't, I'm Ant-Man. It feels like it's not even a secondary character. You know, it feels like the fifth cousin to the Marvel major characters, you know. So it's a little trying in that sense that we're finally going to see something further off the beaten path, you know, as far as can they. Because in a way, if they can turn Ant-Man into a decent success, then I mean, imagine the depths of the mines limit that they can go to. Yeah
sky is the limit. Then we'll have Howard the Duck rebirth. I'm telling you, it's not far off. All right, let's talk about Peanuts and not the nut, the Charles Schulz
styrofoam.
Now this, the trailer is, let's be honest here, made for very young children, and this might appeal to them. And when the little piano music came on, I was entertained for like 10 seconds, and then this thing is just, this is, I mean, made for little kids. It's real little kids, and this was painful to get through for me.
Really? I'd go the opposite. I think this was pretty perfect for a Peanuts trailer, but you have to like Peanuts, you know?
I'm more of a pistachio kind of guy, but I will see this.
Yeah, I think the animation looks great. I think it's a perfect way of taking those, cartoon drawings that he did and making them into the three-dimensional characters. All that stuff works, but the jokes are definitely Peanuts stuff, and it's not gonna be, you know, which I think does a great job of showing children and in their imaginary worlds and dealing with kid type things. I don't know. I liked Peanuts. Right. I could watch this.
All right. Well, you're a little higher on it than I am.
We have to see, though, because, you know, the Lego movie was really good. You never know.
I know. I got to hold my judgment on that, because that was, I thought, going to be for real small children, and that ended up being very good.
Yeah. Yeah. So this could be horrible, too, so I don't know.
Let's talk about Good Kill. This is the new movie from Andrew Nicolai, who did Gattaca, Lord of War, a whole bunch of movies. Basically always worked with Ethan Hawke, who's in this again. This is about drone pilots and the effect it has on them mentally and all that kind of good stuff. This, to me, looks like a very good movie. I like this trailer quite a bit, and I'm excited to see this movie. Where do you stand on this?
Yeah, it looks great, right? I mean, Zero Dark Thirty-ish, with the advanced kind of warfare stuff and a little bit of American Sniper. I kind of like those two movies mixed together, it looks like.
And even a bit of an Ender's Game, I thought, with the kids and, you know, the kind of speech there in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Some of the dialogue's a bit on the nose, I thought, for some of this. But, I mean, for the most part, I really thought it was pretty good.
Ethan Hawke is one of the more underrated actors we have. I mean, this guy has been in so many movies. I really liked him in this trailer, especially when he tells that kid about, I killed 6 Iraqis this morning, and I'm going to have some beer and have a barbecue. Yeah, I kind of like that whole the way he played that scene.
And you have to admit, great that, line. Again, he had Bruce Greenwood playing what's his name from Commander. Top Gun part, you know?
Tom Skerritt role.
Yeah. Tom Skerritt, thank you, just as he did in Star Trek.
Star Trek, yeah. I saw that too. Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, he's always kind of the get your shit together kind of guy. All right, yeah, we both say look at this trailer though. I think Good Kill is going, and Zoe Kravitz, my goodness, yeah. Is she turning into a little just she looks just like her mom. She looks just like Lisa Bonet did back in the 80s, mm-hmm. 90s.
Well, it's got a great cast. Yeah, January Jones I like a lot, and I think is going to be good.
Yeah, it will be good, I think. All right, moving on. Let's talk about Anarchy, a.k.a.
Is it I didn't even watch this, I have to admit. I don't know. You're going to have to tell me about it. I couldn't even find it. I don't even know what this is.
Starring Ed Harris, Ethan Hawke once again, your boy Anton Yelch. There's a whole colorful cast in this. It's based on a William Shakespeare play, or very little known Shakespeare play. And it looks like it's going to be done in the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet style, where they upgraded it visually to the modern day, but they're using the bard's text. Ed Harris is spouting bold, loud proclamations, and everybody seems to be running around on volume 10 in this trailer, even though there doesn't seem to be much. It's much ado about nothing, if you ask me, to be punny. I think this trailer sucks in this movie. It's really strange. Ed Harris seems to be the lead of a biker gang, and he's running around in a leather jacket that looks like it was taken from the Terminator 2 set. I mean, he really looks like he's doing an Arnie impression, and it's just, or better yet, he looks like the guy from American Cyborg Steel Warrior in this fucking thing. So, if you know that, check out that movie instead of this Anarchy trailer.
I'm almost glad I didn't watch this. I don't even.
You're missing nothing. You're welcome. Yes.
Okay. So let's move
on.
Let's talk about the one
you had me watch. The Lazarius effect.
Did you watch the other one?
I did watch the other one too. Let's talk about the Lazarius effect first.
Okay. The lazy effect. That's what affects me. Plagues me every day.
I mean, this movie is Flatliners and Pet Sematary mixed in one. How great!
But worse, right? I mean, I thought this was going to be interesting. I mean, Flatliners, if this was more like that, would be great. But it starts off being all sciencey and interesting and like, oh, what happens if they bring someone back? And then it just turns into like she's just possessed. So what a weak ending. It's two movies.
Yeah, it's the first half of this trailer.
I watch one movie.
I want to see the possessed dog movie. I don't want to see the other. I mean, I thought that it starts off great, and then she just becomes the focal point. I thought you lost.
But very scientific in a sense. I thought this was going to be a science movie, and instead it's like a devil movie, right? Yeah, I mean, this could have been very possessed. Could have been good, but it feels like it just takes a cheap turn there. And there's no need to explain it. You know, once she's brought back from the dead, she's possessed, and then that's it, right? She's gonna kill people. It's like, okay, I don't. Where does this possibly go that I would even care?
And Olivia Wilde's stuck now in horror films. It seems like she's done The Quiet Ones last year, and then this one. Now she's done two.
She has a lot of dramas
get her out
too.
Of this.
But yeah, I don't know. She's not. Well, she does smaller movies. That's where she is.
I felt bad for her, this trailer.
I mean, what are you going to do with her?
A weak trailer.
Yeah. I thought it would look like a fairly Screen Gems-ish movie with just no weight to it whatsoever. And I thought it was going to be cool for a second. Like you say with the dog, that was kind of cool. It's like, what's going to happen to the dog? And by the way, does the dog, is he possessed by an evil dog demon?
That's what I'm saying. Pet Sematary and Flatliners. That's not a bad pitch. But it didn't come out that way.
But then it does. It's neither of those. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really The Exorcist.
It's something else. Yes. Gotcha.
Third act twist. Yeah.
Gotcha, suckers.
All right, you also have me watch the trailer for something called Big Game, which is the largest budgeted film in Finland's history. This is a Finnish film by their number one director. I guess the number one director used to be Renny Harlin, but now it's this chap.
It's Jamari Helander.
I'm so glad you said that.
I have no idea how to say his name. Yeah, I don't know.
You said it pretty well. I bought it.
Sure.
This is basically about a little boy who's sent out in the woods by his tribe to be a man, and while he's out there, the presidency of the United States crash lands into the woods, and they become friends a la Enemy Mine.
Well, he helps them.
Bond,
it's like, yeah.
And go on the greatest fucking adventure this side of Flight of the Navigator.
Like like ram, like people are after the president. It reminded me of like Cliffhanger and shit like that.
But with this looks fantastic. Kid. I think it looks awesome.
It looks awesome, right? Biggest... It looks like so much fun. If you haven't seen, there's this guy's first feature film was Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale, which is equally as fun thing. Movie. Yes, with the evil Santa Claus and stuff. And it just looks amazing. It's amazingly shot. And he's using the same DP on this. I don't know the guy's name. But it looks equally as good. And the dude's got vision for like weird action movies. And this just looks like so much fun.
Especially that sequence when they're swimming to the underground or under the water when the Air Force One is crashed. Mm-hmm. There's just a nice like kind of awe moments in this trailer, like awe inspiring moments, and they can shoot action well. And it's such a fucking outlandish premise. And Samuel L. Jackson is the leader of the free world, and the way he's playing it, I immediately just was thinking, and this is either going to be horrendous or horrendous and a guilty pleasure all at the same time, because there's no way that this movie is going to get any respect, but yeah. It might be regarded kind of a cult classic.
We've had a couple of these good movies like this. Iron Sky was one I thought that's just so outlandishly right, yeah. out there, but it's just done so damn well that you can't help but like it. It's ridiculous. It almost makes you want to say maybe for these Marvel movies, this is kind of the next step. This is actually the step I want Guardians of the Galaxy to take, or even Ant-Man, but they play it so safe. But if they took some of their ridiculous Marvel comic book ideas and really ran with them, you could have something. It's just so much fun.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple movies that are in the same vein of this. I didn't even mention that Hidalgo, that little lone movie that we watched a couple years ago, or many years ago now, that kind of low-budget movie was the same idea. The kind of fun, just... good idea, but just fun effects driven. And there's something to be said about having a good time at the movies. I mean, that was what a lot of people remember as their childhood, having a good time seeing these movies. And this movie looks like it'd be a good time watching. Like you said, fun and just...
It just looks like a blast, kind of, right?
Just crazy, too, at the same time. Like, what?
Yeah.
Who thought of that? All right, moving on. We talked about Chappie a while back, and I didn't remember you being too keen on the trailer. So I remember thinking a little better than you thinking it, but I thought it was a Short Circuit ripoff. Now it looks like it's channeling RoboCop in this latest trailer, and I got to tell you, the results are a lot better.
Oh my God, it's everything now. It's RoboCop meets Short Circuit meets whatever other Android-based iRobot, whatever the hell you want to throw in there. This thing is taking all of them and putting them into one movie, and it looks fucking awesome.
It's doing it really well.
It does. It looks like a lot of fun, and it's something different. It's not really different, but it's something that's new that you didn't, it's nice to see something unexpected again.
I'm so glad I watched this new trailer because I thought the first one was good, but this one looks so good. Hugh Jackman, it looks like he's very good in this movie. The special effects, like we said before, and I'll say it again, are outstanding. I think this has a shot at being not only Oscar worthy next year, but some people's favorite movie of next year.
You have to admit the difference. There's a huge difference between these two trailers, and you should watch both of them, because this one, to me, this felt like a whole movie. This felt like, oh, there's a whole world here, there's a whole movie around this. It isn't just about I created a robot who thinks I'm a robot, I'm cute, which was what the first one was to me. It's like it's lacking a complete story, and this really rounded it out, and in a good way.
It also put to shame the RoboCop remake. I mean, even the trailer just puts to shame.
Oh, by far, right?
The fucking whole movie.
And yeah. I love the nods to it, though, right? Like, the robots themselves kind of look like a RoboCop type thing. And even the other one that he made looks like
Ed 209. Yeah, it looks like it.
It does. It has that same feel to it. I mean, it's not specific to RoboCop. There have been a lot of robots that look like that, but I think it feels very kind of pointed towards that, right? Like they're definitely saying this is a RoboCop type world.
Yeah, I was really impressed at this trailer, and you hit it on the head when you said that this is just a totally different movie. It looks like our complete movie. The other one looked like it was a little bit kind of happy-go-lucky with maybe some heart tugging moments, and this looks like it's a complete film with action and heartfelt moments on top of it, but also a lot of ideas, more ideas than that were presented in the first one. And I everything works in this trailer. Absolutely everything.
Yeah. So this is kind of a sleeper hit again, right? I think this is going to be one of the surprise ones. It does feel like the name of the Tom Cruise movie. What was the name they decided
Edge
on?
Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow. Thank you. Yeah. Never say die, kill, whatever the fuck it is. But it feels something like that. You know, something where you see it and you're like, yeah, it's a big budget movie, but. When you go in to watch it, it's going to be something a little bit more, and it's going to be a surprise hit, but maybe not even a surprise.
I agree with you. I think in a year from now, we'll be discussing this movie as it's being talked about in the Golden Globes and Oscar contentions. I think it really does have a shot at that. All right. Well, that wraps up the trailer.
Unfortunately,
as we say, we're both, basically saying that Big Game, Chappie, and Good Kill look like good trailers. So watch those ones.
Yeah, and Ant-Man too. But Ant-Man, you've probably already seen that.
Exactly. If you're 29 fucking million downloads, you've probably already seen the shit. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up episode 261. We want to thank you, as always, for joining us on tonight's episode. Like always, you can go to moviemavericks.com and get reviews for the movies we talked about on the show. You can also listen to past episodes of the podcast on moviemavericks.com or iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you may be getting your podcasts from.
Call me on the phone. I'll repeat them verbatim for you.
Exactly. You hit us up. I'll give you a quick rundown of what you missed. It ain't shit. Okay.
I'll let you know all about it.
Good, 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 bad, good. Okay. Well, speaking for the other movie maverick, Mr. Trevor Anderson, I am Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Oh, my. Another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!